What's up, it's Chase Young.
What's up, this is Terry McLaurin.
This is Carson Wentz, and you're listening to Washington Football Talk Podcast.
There are plenty of things to say after the Commanders' 23-10 win over the Houston Texans. But at the top of the list has to be that this was a prime letdown spot for a team with a terrible history of letdowns, and it didn't happen. They went down there, they got an easy win, a laugher, a snoozer. That's what good teams do, and that, for this organization, is progress.
On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field, too, when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase and Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase and Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.
What up, everybody? It's JP Finley. It's Washington Football Talk Podcast. It's three dudes in three very different locations, all of them undisclosed. But it's important because we're celebrating a big dub. Commanders now get to 6-5 on the year. The playoff talk is very real. It's Thanksgiving week, and they got a winning record, damn it. And if anybody told you they thought we'd be here at the end of September, they're lying. We're brought to you by the great people at Oarsman Automotive of Virginia. We ride with them, want you to do the exact same thing. Got to have dinner with our friend Roberto Biagio last night. Go check out Biagio at Oarsman Chevy Buick GMC right there in Alexandria. Joined by Mitch and Pete. Boys, how we doing?
We're doing good. I mean, that game wasn't the most exciting football game in the world, but got the Commanders to 6-5, a winning record. And the best part of it for me was that the defense put their foot on the Texans' throat from the start and didn't let up. Obviously, the pick six is the big play from Kendall Fuller early on in that game, but the first two runs right up the middle from Damian Pierce, John Allen, the first one, John Allen, you know, blew it up 3 yards in the backfield. The second one, Daron Payne blew him up, and from then on, they set the tone. They told the Texans, this is who we are. You're not going to be able to run the ball on us. You're not going to be able to move the ball, and hell, the entire first half, they had 5 total yards of offense. It was a dominating win, and I feel like it's been a long time since the Commanders have, this franchise has been in a game where there was no doubt that they were going to win it the entire way through, and they never let up at all.
Yeah, I think sure it would have been nice if Heineke and the offense had a little bit more of a productive afternoon. Maybe put up 30 points. Maybe it was 31-10 or 28-3, and you avoid that last second Davis Mills touchdown. But regardless, this was a team telling another team, we're better than you, we're more talented than you, we're going to get out to a lead, and then we're going to keep you at arm's length for the whole time we're on the field together. And there are not enough of these for Washington fans, Washington reporters, Washington players, so I think you have to cherish this one. And for them to talk all week about avoiding a letdown and then actually do it, that shows maturity. That shows that Ron Rivera has these players' ears. And I think that is really, really encouraging as we move down the final stretch.
Agree with your second point. Disagree with the cherish this win notion. The win was kind of junk. The Texans are terrible. Like, I think it's cool. They won. You move forward. But, like, a good team, this is completely forgettable that they won against a bad team. You know what I mean? So let's hope that a year from now or some other parallel universe, like, yeah, they beat the Texans. No big deal. Defense was dominant. You talked about Allen. I mean, Allen's playing out of this world. Daron Payne had a great game. Payne was real smooth looking in postgame. I never get to do this, but in the stock report, I got to write like 10 dudes for stock up. Logan Thomas had a good game.
JP, did you stock up Scott Turner? Because I was concerned that they were going to come out and get away from what they did that was so successful for them on offense against Philly, and they didn't. They committed to the run. They got another 40 runs out of these backs and wide receivers. It was creative the way that they got the ball. They're falling in love with that Curtis Samuel end around play on something in short. And you know what? They should, because it's working like a charm. And I think the biggest part of that, you talked about Logan Thomas, you know, stepping up and having a good game receiving, But those tight ends do, when they run that reverse, it's on Logan Thomas or it's on Cole Turner or John Bates, whoever's on the end, to seal off the end or the linebacker that's on the outside there. And they've been doing a really, really good job of it. And Pete, you called it. You said Curtis Samuel was going to have a big game and was going to get in the end zone, and he did.
Yeah, that was a good call.
Thank you. We'll get to my other call a little bit later in the show. There's some controversy there, but regardless, just nice to see Curtis. He's with Terry's just continued emergence and Taylor now stepping in a quarterback and Brian Robinson doing things. There's only so much bandwidth you can devote to each player on offense, but Curtis Samuel probably deserves a little more press for how he's playing. I mean, he runs hard. He runs into tackles. He's not afraid of contact, and it's great to see him bounce up every time. And you got a one-on-one interview with him, JP, that will play at the end of the podcast where he's just like, yeah, receiver, running back, it doesn't matter. Just give me the ball. And I love how Scott Turner is using him. I think this team is now justified in the major money they paid him last offseason. While William Jackson's languishing in Pittsburgh, that one was a whiff. I think this Curtis Samuel one is a hit. And overall, this was an ideal game. Heinicke didn't do a lot, but he didn't have to do a lot. They were able to win the time of possession. It wasn't as extreme as that Eagles game. Nothing will be, but this was a more tame version of how Washington wants to play its ball games every weekend.
What was funny is when I got on post game, B. Mitch and Santana were talking, and I mean, we all know how B is, that he grades on a very harsh curve at all things, but they didn't think they ran it enough. And I was like, all right, well, like the carries would tell you differently. I mean, 18 for Gibson, 15 for Robinson, right? And then I do think there was one series in they had first and goal inside the 10, and it was like two passes and a run there. And I think they should have done that differently. I think the big difference today is like the volume of plays didn't approach, and probably it probably won't approach that Philly game again. But like the volume of, they weren't good on third down again. And when you're not good on third down, like you're just not going to be able to run it as often because you're not on the field. And I don't think Taylor was very good. I'm just going to be very clear. Like, it wasn't a good game for him, and I think the passing game really struggled. What did he finish, 15 to 27?
Yeah, and his first throw of the game should have been an interception, except that Texas TV dropped it. Right. Yeah, that could have changed the whole afternoon. Like, that could have changed it all right there.
I am celebrating the win. They are 6-5, legitimate playoff discussion. And they just turned everything around, and Taylor's a huge part of that. But you can't complete 15 passes in the NFL. Like, they played offensively. They played good enough to beat one team in the NFL, and it was this terrible team for me.
It's not too often you go 3-13 on third down, and you are the better third down offense in the game. But the Texans are 2-13, and that's because of Washington's defense, which a couple weeks ago before the Vikings game, I wasn't ready to call them good. I'm skipping over good. This is a great defense. The D-line is out of control. Montez Sweat popping up today, showing that he should be regarded as one of the better defensive ends in the sport. I'd love to see him be a little more consistent, but regardless, his ceiling is crazy high. It was cool to see Kendall Fuller get his first pick. JP also talks to him at the end of the podcast. Cam Curl's a stud. Derek Forrest creates a turnover every week. Like, all three levels of this thing are working now, and credit to Jack Del Rio. Aside from him being an idiot in the offseason and saying something he shouldn't have, he's been really, really good this year, and he's putting guys in the right spots. And he's getting his best players on the field. So, the offense left some to be desired, but the defense responded time and time again and just shut down the Texans. Damian Pierce, 8 yards rushing. His previous low on the season was 33. That's one of the best running backs in the NFL, and they erased him all game long, Mitch Tischler.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to gloss over Daron Payne and John Allen. I mean, we've mentioned it, and it's so impressive to watch them work. I mean, you know, they're dominating the inside. They're dominating offensive lines like we haven't seen in DC in hell, maybe forever. But to me, the one of the biggest, you know, additions has been Derek Forrest forcing these turnovers. I mean, every defense needs a guy who's a ball hawk and finds his way to be around all the time and kind of make those big plays. And it looks like Derek Forrest is turning into that guy. I mean, every time you look up, he's making a big hit or he's catching a deflected interception, whatever it may be. I mean, the guy just has a nose for the ball. And, you know, we don't talk about Cam Curl nearly enough on this podcast and about this team. He's a really effing good player. And the prospects of the secondary having, you know, the safeties being Cam Curl and Derek Forrest, you know, not just this year as, you know, they've made this turn and have started, the defense has started to play well, but that's a pretty solid foundation for a future, you know, having those two guys back there. And it's been fun to watch Derek Forrest, you know, come back from the injury and be able to, you know, get out on the field and play as much as he has. And the two of those guys, Cam Curl, Derek Forrest, man, it's effing awful, awesome watching them play back there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I can't describe how much the location where I'm at sucks. But I think Ron, after the game, I'm incredibly angry right now. Ron, after the game, said what he had to. Like, anybody that thinks he had a choice in this matter is nuts. Ron says Taylor's going to be the guy. Of course Taylor's going to be the guy. You've won – what do they want, 5 or 6 since he became the starter? 4 or 5?
Four or five.
Carson started the Bears game. Like, you can't change it now. And I think anybody that thinks it's locked in that Taylor's got it the rest of the way, you're nuts too. Like, as long as it goes well, Taylor's your guy. You're not going to bench a quarterback, especially after the Philly performance. Like, of course it's Heinicke for now. Like, it's not the long-term answer, but – people are trying to like pin Ron down on like, you know, when he made his decision. And to me, there was no decision to make.
Well, I think people were trying to pin him down on when, because he said he talked to both Taylor and Carson. And I think that's what people were trying to pin him down on. And at the end of the day, whatever, he talked to them whenever he did about, you know, who was going to be the starter today against the Texans and next week against the Falcons. And I agree with you. I think Taylor's the starter until he's not. You know, he's gonna, as long as they're winning football games and he's playing, you know, conservative football and not losing games for them, I think he's gonna be your starter. But to me, I don't. Did you guys watch Carson on the sideline much today at all, or were you paying attention? Like, Carson Wentz was very involved in the game and very into what was going on. He obviously had the earbud in where he was listening to plays, but every time Heinicke came off the field, Wentz was one of the first guys that went over and met him. They were sitting down, and even before you know, any of the coaches came over, the two of them were looking at the iPad together or the Microsoft tablet, whatever, you know, going over plays and stuff like that. I mean, you know, for all the talk about Carson and whatever happened in Indy or Philly or whatever, he's being a really good leader here, and I think he's taken it well, and I think, you know, I think he's helping out Taylor a lot in terms of, you know, mindset and going over stuff, and I think that matters.
Yeah, Ron made the only choice he could have. I think Taylor has now enough equity built up to survive one bad game. If he has an all-time Nathan Peterman-like outing, then maybe that'll be enough to get Carson in there. But if he throws 2 picks against the Falcons next week, and they lose by 6 points, then I think Taylor should get one more shot. But I'm really happy for Taylor. Yeah, I don't think
he has the equity, because there haven't been enough good performances either. Like go through, how many of these would you say are good?
Right.
Philly.
Philly was good. I think Packers after the really bad start was good. And there's a lot of qualifiers. Right, like Indy was awesome, but he.
Indy was awful.
But Carson was good. Indy was Carson awful. had the excellent opener, and that was it.
In a vacuum, you're correct. But they're paying Carson $28 million. They traded 2 picks for him. Like, they're going to try to validate that. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying theoretically. I'm just trying to look at what I actually see happening in reality. Like, yeah.
Well,
theoretically, you're correct. I don't think this will play out. Like, Taylor doesn't get the benefit of any doubt because the other guy's getting paid $28 million. And he said in August.
Yeah, I hear you, and you're probably not wrong because that's how the NFL works. But I would think that hopefully Ron can understand that whatever he sees out of Carson, if Carson plays again the rest of the way in the 2 or 3 weeks that he does, the 4 weeks, it's not going to be enough sample size to then have Carson be your starter. Carson would have to go out and go 20 touchdowns and no picks over a month for him to be the starter next year. So what's the point? You try to validate it. That decision is wasted. That was a bad trade, and there's no point in investing any more time. This team, on defense is playoff ready and has offensive players who are playoff ready. And Taylor has shown to be a smidge better at getting this ball moving or helping out the defense, whatever it is. This team is better with him in the lineup. So I would hope Ron doesn't go that way, but I would also understand if he does, because that's how this stupid league works sometimes.
I got to be honest. I don't think it's about validating the Carson Wentz signing at this point, because I think, you know, to kind of, you know what you got out of him and you realize that he's not worth the 2 third rounders. It's the fact that Taylor goes out there and, you know, whatever the moxie, whatever the thing is that he has that everyone rallies around that we love and matters, helps this team as a whole. But Taylor as a quarterback, as a player, you know, hasn't gone out and won any game. He doesn't go out and win games necessarily for you. Whereas Carson at least has that ability to be a quarterback that can go out and throw for 350 and four touchdowns. And, you know, he might throw a couple picks, you know, with it as well. But, you know, you're going to get to a point where you're going to have to score more than 17 points in a game. You're going to have to score more than the 23 that you scored, you know, against a really bad Texans team today to win. And I don't know, you know, you don't know when that day is going to come. You know, the Falcons aren't necessarily the highest flying team. The Giants, you know, two in a row there. You know, they played obviously quite poorly against the Lions today.
The Falcons can score, dude.
The Falcons run the ball very well. And right now, I wouldn't want to be a running back going up against this Commanders defense. I mean, I think that's going to be it's going to be tough sledding for them next week. But that, we don't have to get into previewing that. My point being, Carson can go out and win you a football game with the talent that he has.
I'm throwing up in my mouth right now as you talk about this. By the way, this is Carson won them one game. It was week one against the Eagles. He shouldn't have been on an NFL field. Against the Cowboys, he was non-existent. Against the Titans, he threw an interception on the goal line. Against the Bears, they scored 12 points after a muff punt. Carson Wentz is not worthy of any playing time for this team. No.
I disagree with you. I'm not going to Carson right now because what's happening is working. But, Taylor doesn't go out and win you football games, period.
Selective memory for young Peter Haley. Carson's not good, but neither is Taylor. And they're going to ride with Taylor as long as they're winning. But that's
Taylor helps out this offensive line a lot in terms of his movement back there and all that. This running game was nowhere to be found when Carson was at quarterback. And part of that, I think, was the way that Scott Turner was calling the game.
They also didn't have Brian Robinson.
They didn't have Brian Robinson, right.
And they had the terrible version of the O-line. The O-line's gotten much more manageable.
They've become a good, you know, they've been playing well as of late. Carson stepping in there, you know, ticks down the offensive line play because he's going to take the bad sacks. He's going to see ghosts, all the things that we saw when we saw bad Carson. But at the same time, you know, if Scott Turner can call the same type of game and get 40 runs out of this team and get them on some, you know, get them on all these, you know, second and shorts, third and shorts, you know, being able to kind of move the ball. That's a different kind of game than the game Carson was playing in the first 4 weeks of the season. So, listen, I'm not saying Carson's a good quarterback by any means. I'm just saying let's not pretend like Taylor's a star.
I wouldn't say Taylor's a star. I would never get confused with Taylor being a star. But this whole equation works better with him in there because of the mobility, because he uses Terry McLaurin, which Carson wasn't doing, and Carson was regressing. Taylor, while he may not be progressing, I think he's at least consistently average. Carson, with the lows and the highs, makes this more volatile. And I think this team is best when they can predict what the offense is going to do and let the defense shine. I would hate to see Carson Wentz in this lineup again.
I won't go as far as Pete, who's kind of been pretty far the whole time. I don't know that today would have been much of a difference between Taylor and Carson. But Taylor really made plays in that Philly game, and that I'll give him credit for that. Today, though, the whole team, you could tell that it felt like they knew they could win, and they just didn't. A buddy of mine texted me, it's like they're playing with their food. Like, you know how, like, when a cat kills a mouse, it, like, plays with it? Like, that's what the second half was. Like, they were just, like, kind of – dude, I can't stress it enough. That Houston team, John McClain is like a legendary NFL reporter who's covered football.
Killing them.
Dude, I know and respect and like really look up to that dude and went up to him at halftime and he's like, this is the worst offense I've ever covered. Like they're
I'm sorry
awful.
For John McClain. So, I'm sorry for him.
What do you want to do here? Game balls? Rapid fire.
Yeah, let's do some game balls. I think we can each go around.
Payne, Allen, Sweat. Lead the charge.
Pretty easy there. Mitch, you got Forrest. A couple?
Derek Forrest.
Sure. I'll go Kendall Fuller, first ever touchdown. Maybe there was like a little bit of
that's
a
crazy.
Lull
it's his
team.
First touchdown.
Right. I think maybe there could have been a lull, but when your defender gets a pick six on the second play of the game, that'll wake you up out of whatever perhaps lull you would have been in. So I think that was really important to give them that spark. And then I'll go Joey Sly, 3 for 3, hit his extra points, and he's got 7 field goals in the past 6 days. That dude took some heat early on in the season and in the preseason, but right now he's absolutely nails on special teams.
Curtis Samuel, dude. I mean, he had the touchdown, and this stat that came out during the game, Samuel becomes one of 4 wide receivers in the Super Bowl era with 600-plus rush yards, 6 rushing touchdowns, 2,500 receiving yards, 15 receiving touchdowns in a career. The others on the list, Jerry Rice, Tyreek Hill, and Eric Metcalf. Pretty damn elite.
Antonio Gibson. I thought he looked explosive today, both in the pass game and the run game. He was clearly the better back between the two with Brian Robinson, but B-Rob ran the ball well too, but I was impressed with Gibson. He hit the holes. He hit some holes hard.
Last one for me, and then we'll go to our recaps. Logan Thomas, by far his best game of the season. He may not be all the way back. I think that touchdown chance he had in the back right of the end zone, maybe if he's a little healthier, he can jump up to stab it, but really cool to see him in the mix and gives this offense another weapon. All right.
Real quick. We got to give Rivera some credit. That is a spot for a team to mess up, and they didn't. And one of you guys said that on pregame, and I'm agreeing with whichever one of you said it.
I'll take credit for it, so you can agree with me. And Mitch was not the genius who said whatever you think we said.
I think that's exactly what I said too on pregame, but that's okay. Go to over-unders.
Heinicke, 215.5. He was under. JP and Mitch were correct. Robinson rush yards, 63.5. He was under. Pete was correct. So we're all tied going into the final. Well, we all took under on the Heinicke roller coaster index, and he cruised to that under. So nobody wins this week. 100 chips, JP, Washington -3. He picks a winner, nailed it. 100 chips for him there. He's up to 270 on the year. Mitch took Robinson touchdown, did not come through. I'm sorry, Mitch, you're down to -265. And then I had Curtis Samuel touchdown +205. Curtis found pay dirt, helped me out. I'm up to 130 on the season. And our side bets, JP had Sam Howell to play. It sure looked like he was about to get there, but he didn't. So I don't owe JP 100-some bucks. And the somewhat controversy, I picked the Benjamin bet score again, Washington 23, Houston 10. However, it feels kind of shady to shake my friends out of another 100 bucks. So I think I'll just get a nice pat on the back from you guys, and we'll move on. No harm, no foul.
Happy to have a real discussion on that.
Now, very impressive time. Yeah, now's not the time, but that was very impressive, Pete. Well done.
Thank you.
Very impressive.
I pulled the score out of my butt, and it happened to be right. I can't believe it. I'll never do it again. Lastly, that is it, JP. You have your interviews with Kendall Fuller first, and then Curtis Samuel. Two guys, the only two Commanders who stood in the end zone at NRG Stadium today. We have 3 minutes left on our free Zoom. Does anybody have anything else to say?
Do we have to do what makes you smile quickly?
Yeah, what made me smile, brought to you by teethkeepers.com. They provide high-quality vision and dental care. Mitch, you go first as I think of one.
You really were. This was not necessarily Commanders-related, but our guy, Maury Povich, who loves the pod and loves being a guest, was inducted into the Greater Washington Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. That made me smile.
Wow, that's a really big reach, Mitch. But congrats to Maury, and I love that for him. Maybe we'll be able to like speak at the ceremony, but I guess it already happened, so never mind. What made me smile is that JP and I could write our stories and submit them well before the fourth quarter ended, because that's what happens with good teams. We never experienced that, so I liked having a stress-free afternoon. JP, what made you smile with those pearly whites?
I'll tell you what doesn't make me smile is the Houston Hobby Airport. What's up, man? How you doing, dude? Nice to meet you. What does make me smile, it's pretty remarkable that they had a win to go 6-5 and get into serious playoff contention, and neither of you dopes picked anything about the game. If you're a football fan and like a real football fan, the way that defensive line performed today, that made you smile. I mean, they were dominant against a lesser opponent. That the poor kid playing center for the Texans. I mean, I hope he calls his mom after the game and she's like, "It's all right. I still love you." Like, I mean, that was just abuse of the highest order. And that made me smile, man. Like, we talk all the time about how the Commanders have invested all this on the defensive line and they should be really good. And I think I'm frozen right now. You guys don't hear me, but
I got you.
If you like football, the effort from that D-line has got to make you smile.
Yes. And JP making it to the end of this podcast made me smile. JP, go like punch a hole in a wall or scream at somebody. You're done. We'll talk to you all. Off.
What's the tallest bridge in America
this week?
Is it Chesapeake Bay Bridge?
We are covering a potential playoff squad and it feels so damn good. And we'll talk to you later in the week. Happy pre-Thanksgiving. Mitch, I love you. Have a good trip home. JP, I love you. Keep your blood pressure down. Listeners, I love you. Thanks for listening. Here comes JP.
My blood pressure gets high.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
What Makes You Smile is brought to you by Dominion National. For anyone that needs dental and vision benefits, I have a one-stop shop for you. TeethKeeperSave.com. TeethKeeperSave.com offers dental and vision benefits for everyone with plans starting under $7 a month. Don't have benefits through your employer? Are you self-employed and need dental and vision benefits? TeethKeeperSave.com has various plans for individuals to choose from. Visit TeethKeeperSave.com today and enroll in minutes. There's the life you seek, and then there's the support you need to get there. At SECU, your goals are our goals. From daily banking and financial planning, we're a place where seekers always win. Visit secumd.org.
Kendall, thank you for making time with us. Great team win today. I think defensively, you guys played pretty close to your best. How did it feel for you?
I felt pretty good, especially in the first half. I think we were just clicking on all cylinders. Guys were playing aggressive, making their plays. And one thing, you know, John preached in the locker room was finishing out games, you know, just playing to our standard all four quarters. And that's something that we want to pick up on next week.
Let's talk about you getting the scoring started today with that pick six. What'd you see? How'd you know to jump that route? Was it from film study or just a reaction?
Yeah, just a little bit of both. You know, watching film, just being prepared, understanding the concepts that they're running, and then just being able to use my eyes and kind of look at the quarterback, read the quarterback, and make a play on the ball and get into the end zone, which was a good start for the team.
How good did it feel getting in the end? I couldn't believe when I saw 7 years in the NFL, that's your first pick six.
I know. I was recently thinking about that I haven't scored yet, but I'm glad I crossed that off the list, and hopefully more to come.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what about the effort from the guys up front, man? Yeah. How nice is it to play corner when they're harassing a quarterback like that? Between Payne, Allen, and Sweat, those guys just had huge days.
Yeah, I love it, man. We talk every week, man. I remember I used to always go up to them dudes like, "Hey, y'all eat, I eat." And they come up to me like, "Hey, you eat, we eat." And that's just the dominance that those guys have, man, the work that they put in throughout the week, and the preparation that you see them put in. It doesn't surprise you once you come out here on Sundays and see them dominate.
Brian Mitchell has a question for you in the studio.
Well, Kendall, they say that defensive backs are put in as a defensive back because they can't catch the football. But I know in your family, you have multiple defensive backs, and you had a receiver in the family too. Did you pick up a little bit of the receiver tactics from your brother?
Yeah, for sure. And Corey definitely had hands. And I was the guys don't believe it, but I was a pretty good wideout in high school too. So I think I was one of those that chose to play DB.
All right, gotcha.
I believe that you were pretty good in high school at wideout. Just so if you need somebody to back you up, I believe that.
I appreciate that. I think I got the tape to prove it too.
Something tells me that a guy that's played 7 years in the NFL, probably pretty good in high school. I'm just going to go on a limb here. A couple of young guys I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Forrest, second-year player, was hurt most of his rookie year. Mm-hmm. What kind of contributions is he making out there?
Man, just his energy, man. And sometimes it's not all the rah-rah, but just the speed that he plays with. He's one of those guys. Me and Bobby was just talking like, man, D-Folk gonna run to the ball. And whether that's tackling, getting picks, making the hustle plays, he's going to run to the ball. And that energy that you just – that speed that you feel on the field, that's something that we need and that's something that we feed off of.
And then – a guy that had a tough rookie season, but Jamin Davis is is really starting to play good football. He's starting to take command of the huddle. What have you seen in Jamin's growth?
Just playing more free. And just taking strides in the film room. You know, him and since Cole's got hurt, I know Cole's been preparing with him a lot more, getting him in the film room, trying to prepare him for Sundays. And I think that's the biggest thing. You know, we all know that he can fly around on the field, use his speed, and make plays. But I think just taking that next step in terms of preparation in the film room has definitely been helpful for him.
How close is this defense to playing their best?
I mean, week in and week out, we just keep on getting better. And I think that's the thing. Like, you can go out there and have a perfect game on Sunday, and it's still going to be – when you watch tape, there's always things to improve on. So I think that's something that you always strive. You strive to reach perfection, knowing that you never get there. And you just keep on hunting, keep on going after it, and, you know, just letting it all loose on Sundays.
Last one. Let's put him on the spot. Santana Moss is quite a receiver. I assume Santana was good in high school. Santana, do you believe that Kendall was a good high school wide receiver?
It's in his pedigree, man. Yeah. I'm riding with you, Kendall.
Real one.
Look, you know what? It's kind of hard for a guy to grow up in that kind of household with all those brothers and think he played one position. I played corner, and folks don't believe that, but I was, you know, I preferred corner at one point in time, but I just didn't want to be hitting guys 200-plus pounds, you know what I mean? So, I, you know, I opted out and say I'd be a receiver full-time, but I definitely side with Kendall.
I have one for him. Better wide receiver or better golfer, Kendall? Which one are you?
Ooh. What's the handicap? Well, football season.
Now?
What are you, like a 13?
Yeah, it's going to be... It's going to be ugly at golf right now. It might be ugly at receiver right now, too, though. I don't know. That's pick your poison right now.
You want to give good counsel some love since we're talking high schools?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know they lost in the playoffs, but they I like what they're doing. They're building up, and I think some championships are coming at good counsel. So I love my alma mater, man. We got so many guys. Shoot, I had Stephon in front of me, so I had no choice but to be good at receiver.
Yeah, maybe that's why the BCC Barons weren't very good, because I was on the field.
Hey, they might need Coach Fuller to show up on a day off. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm definitely there. I train with those guys a lot in the summer, so I'm definitely stay with them.
Love it. Thanks, guys, so much. We appreciate it. Congrats on the win, Kendall.
Curtis, thank you for taking the time. How you guys feeling, man? It was a good team win today. Probably led by the defense, but offensively you guys did enough to get the W.
I mean, we're feeling great. I mean, we're not satisfied, though. I mean, we know there's a lot of things we can clean up out here on this field, you know, to be a better team.
What does it mean for you now that you guys have a winning record? Like, the playoff conversation's very real. You got Atlanta coming into town next week. What is the vibe in that locker room?
I mean, our mindset each and every week is one week at a time, one pony at a time. Just go out there and try to have a great practice week. You know, great preparation, you know, let the game take care of itself.
Was there any concern coming off the Philadelphia game and the emotional high that created that you guys might have a letdown here in Houston?
Not at all. I mean, we don't let wins like that, you know, bring too much emotion out of us to where we don't focus on our next opponent. We didn't really focus on what their record was. We understand that NFL team, they got great guys on that side of the ball. Our job was to come out here and just get a win.
I try to tell people that you are a natural running back because you were a running back. Can you tell the world that you were a running back and that you do you feel just as comfortable there as outside lined up for a pass?
I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but I played running back my whole life. I didn't really make the receiver switch until college.
See, I knew that. Tell the people.
My freshman year of college, I played running back the whole year. If y'all go back and look at the stats, I didn't play receiver at all. My second year of college, that's when I first started playing receiver. Like I say this, I'm a receiver, but at heart, I'm a running back.
Well, I Ohio State recruits some pretty good running backs, so I imagine you were pretty good at it.
I thought I was coming in to play receiver, and then they hit me with the okey-doke.
Brian Mitchell has a question for you. Another guy that got moved around some positions. Well, Mitch, go ahead.
I had a question, but you just asked the question. I wanted to know what he liked the most, being a receiver
or
running back.
Yeah, on your feet.
You know what? Listen, I think he does well at all of them. I just wanted to find out which one he likes the most.
Honestly, just put the ball in my hands. I'm going to make something happen.
There you go.
Great answer. All right. Great answer.
That's the easy answer. What's it like playing with Taylor now? Because the team, I don't think it's directly attributable to him, but the hot streak has also happened with Taylor at quarterback.
I mean, unfortunately, you know, Carson went down. But like I say all the time, our job as receivers is not to focus on who's at quarterback. Our job is to make their life easier, make the game easier for them. Try to get open, you know, win the matchups early, and, you know, just go out there and be a playmaker.
Will this be a more subdued flight home than the flight home from Philly?
I mean, it's going to be a great flight home. You know, we're excited about going home, you know, with another win. And we're just going to start back up this week.
The talent that he has.
I'm throwing up in my mouth right now as you talk about this, by the way.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees? Check. Loaner cars and free car washes? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Kia of Alexandria. Let's ride together.